Welcome to Quiver, the Green Arrow podcast. This is our sixth episode for Arrow, the episode Legacies. I'm one of your hosts, Amanda Conkin.
And I am your other host, Michael Cohen.
Thanks for listening to us. So this week, very interesting. I think you were talking about Stephen Amell's take on this episode.
Yeah. He posted on his Facebook just moments before, I guess about an hour before, that I think the East Coast feed went up, and he said that this sixth episode was really important to him, that when he writes his memoirs years and years from now, that he'll have a whole chapter just on the sixth episode. So going into it, Amanda and I were kind of sitting there going like, huh, I wonder what this episode's all about, that's such a big deal. But I don't know. Like, it was a good episode. Mm-hmm. I think it had its ups and downs. I really liked the Royal Flush Gang in it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not 100% sure what the story is behind it. We'll have to report back on that and maybe find out what was so important about it.
We will. And I mean, you sort of got a little bit more emotional depth to Ollie, this character, mm-hmm. this episode. And I would say perhaps it was his own. I mean, he seems like a very committed actor, and the choices he has to make on the island, that actor, that character versus regular Ollie, maybe it had to do with what he went through. So it's just, I'm very interested to see his own take on it. You could really tell that character had a struggle this week, so perhaps that's maybe from an actor point of view, that it was one of the more difficult roles for him to do, because this was, I think, a more trying episode in terms of the emotional depth that the character had to get to, and really reflecting mm-hmm. on different things. Obviously, Legacies, we knew that there was going to be something to do with the dad. That seemed like the most obvious take. And I liked what you said, that they did keep it as a family for the villains, right?
For the Royal Flush Gang.
The Royal Flush Gang. Yeah. So there's these family dynamics. So it was interesting. I like, again, their episodes always paying attention to these titles because they are showing us the through line of these episodes.
Yeah. We don't have an email prepared for this week, but I do have some. We're better than an email. I have actual contact with one of our listeners. Mm-hmm. I was at the Vancouver Gaming Expo over the weekend.
Nice.
And I was hanging out with Brian Milne, who is one of our avid listeners and hardcore Arrow and Green Arrow fan. And he had some corrections, some errata to make to our previous episodes. Oh. So Yao Fei is not from year one. Uh-huh. He's from 52.
Ooh, okay.
And Dark Archer is only from Smallville.
Oh.
That character hasn't existed anywhere else.
Interesting.
He was created specifically for Smallville. As far as I think that's what I recall Brian saying. He'll have to correct me if I'm wrong again.
I feel like that was a thing that on Smallville you were like, finally, Dark Archer. I thought that was a thing.
I think it was just finally that he had a supervillain of his own. That it wasn't one of Clark's villains, right?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That they brought somebody in specifically to deal with him. So those 2 points I was told to pass on to everybody from our own Wikipedia, our own Aeropedia, Brian. So important things to clear up on this episode of Quiver.
And I'll actually say you all have been really avid on our Facebook wall as well, posting things that are reminding us of things we've never heard of before, and commenting on villains and new characters. So thanks, keep that up, and it's really interesting.
And to follow up on last week's, I just wanted to, I think I had forgotten the person's name that sent in some of that info, and it was Thomas Strange was the one who sent that stuff in to us. Mm-hmm. And like Amanda says, you guys have all been awesome on the Facebook page with and on the website as well, posting stuff on the website, posting your comments and having conversations right there on quiverpodcast.com, right in the threads for the episodes. Nice. So really great that you guys are interacting with all these different different ways that you have to communicate with us. And we've been getting more and more followers on Facebook and Twitter and just everything. So it's been really great to have all you guys getting in on stuff, getting interactive.
Yeah, and keep it up. I mean, it's really good. I feel bad. We had a really good, thorough Facebook post, and I really wanted to share those person's thoughts, but it was really long. So try to keep, like, If you want stuff shared, succinct things that we like to share, we like your thoughts. If you just want to talk to us, that's really cool as well. Yeah. But if we want to share it with other people, succinct and interesting and topical, so it's good. And hopefully, we can share more things
for sure. And maybe when we're on hiatus, we'll see how long the hiatus is, and maybe we'll do a listener feedback episode, and we can just kind of go through the backlog of some of the emails that you guys have sent us.
Oh. One of the best suggestions for our hiatus episodes was from a fan on Facebook who said, get this, that we should get, oh my, I can't believe I'm going to forget his name, the year one, Kevin Smith created year one, right?
And no, he didn't do year one. He did Quiver.
Quiver, right. Yeah. Okay, sorry. But Kevin Smith, and they were like, just inundate him with Twitter feeds, and then he'll come on your podcast and talk to you. And I said, yeah, that would be awesome. I don't know if we have that capacity, but you know.
I don't know that we're to that number yet.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean you guys can't start, because Kevin Smith is very active on Twitter. At that Kevin Smith, that's his Twitter handle. Yeah. So if you're not following him already, follow him and then start tweeting at him that he does need to come on Quiver the Green Arrow podcast, because it's the namesake is his. That's where we got the name from, right? Yeah. So I mean, he's responsible for sort of the as much as Jeff Johns is responsible for the rebirth of Hal Jordan in the Green Lantern stuff, Kevin Smith is responsible for the rebirth of Oliver Queen in the Green Arrow legacy. Yeah. So because he had been dead, and sort of the comics had been gone for a little bit, and then Kevin Smith was the one who brought him back, and brought him back with kind of a bit of a bang, really sort of tapping into all of the different roots of the character and writing a really meaningful story that was contemporary, which is difficult for writers to do. I mean, Superman right now is having a huge hurdle to overcome with this contemporary stuff in the New 52. I haven't read any of the Green Arrow stuff yet, because I haven't really heard anything, and nobody's really saying if it's good or bad. And I gotta get caught up on old Green Arrow stuff before I start worrying about new Green Arrow. But which means I gotta get caught up on everything else that I'm reading before I can jump onto something new. But
pet project. Maybe I'll jump on the new Green Arrow stuff.
A little bit of Green Arrow. Yeah.
But I want to thank you all for having faith in us and suggesting that perhaps we could talk to Kevin Smith. I like your faith in us as a podcast.
I think we can do it. If you hammer home a couple of facts, it's named after his run on Green Arrow. that we're in Vancouver, where he went to film school here, and although he only went for a couple of months and then dropped out and went home and made Clerks, still, he has a fondness for Vancouver, and we're Canadian, and he loves Canadians.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know,
Canadians love him.
We can just sort of hammer those facts home, and hopefully we'll get him to come on the podcast at some point, and talk about Quiver. So I feel like that's a long-term goal that we'll keep working towards over the years. We'll get there.
And our short-term goal this episode is a fun new game that Mike made up.
Yes.
Called
What Color Are Thea's Pants?
And I'm happy to report I won the game.
Yes. Yes.
So legitimately, there was a commercial on beforehand, and Mike was inspired to play. Hey, what color do you think Thea's pants are going to be?
I saw a pair of a pink, sort of, I guess, like skinny jeans or jeggings or whatever, and in a commercial, like a Mark's Work Warehouse commercial or something like that, something totally random. and it just, I was just like, oh, look at that, skinny jeans. I wonder what color Thea's pants will be this week. and I said that out loud. I said to Amanda, I wonder what color her pants will be. What color do you think her pants are going to be? So we both threw down our bets, and Amanda, okay, so because she wore two pairs of jeggings / skinny jeans, or just pants, just skinny pants, we were wrong on the first one. Both of us were way off
because
on the first pair.
They were multicolored camo pants.
They were like camo. But the second pair, Amanda got right.
It was yellow. I did guess yellow, and they were sort of mustardy.
They were kind of mustardy.
And
I had said orange, to be fair.
And she wore an orange top, I'm pretty sure. So in the first one with the camo pants, she was wearing an orange top. And the second one with the mustard pants, I don't know what top she was wearing. But I doubted myself, because they have already used yellow pants once in the show, and I thought they weren't going to again. But I'm glad that yellow went out. Anyways, it's fun. So next time you're watching Arrow, it's a fun little game.
So there's a couple of games now that we have for Arrow. It's how many times will Detective Lance scoff, trick question on this episode, because he wasn't in it, so it was zero. But the other game we can play now is What Color Are Thea's Pants?
It's good.
And it's just... along with all the dramatic stuff that goes on in these episodes, now there's a little bit more fun because the show, it can be fun sometimes, but I think we can make it a little bit more fun.
It's a nice interactive viewing experience.
It's like second screen, and I just think, one screen.
And I think it's Zachary Hare. It's someone on our Facebook as well that's been really interactive, and he used Arrowheads, the term, so I'm excited. It's catching on.
Yeah,
Arrowheads. Fabulous. So we're going to dive right in. Episode 6, Legacies.
Yeah, so
we find out the book. We find out what happened to the book this week.
Secret origin of Oliver's Book of Names. Which was very cool. That was a really cool twist towards the end of the episode.
Yeah.
But we start with the Royal Flush Gang, and there's three of them. These three guys in hockey masks with the cards painted onto them. So we've got the King, I think King, Jack, and Ace are the three members that we've got here. And going into the episode, I wasn't sure what they were going to do with this, because the previews kind of had some interesting stuff going on, and we didn't really get the sense of who the Royal Flush Gang was. And it was really cool to find out that, just like in the comics, even though they're very different from any of the comic incarnations, they're a family, which is which is the way that the team has always been traditionally shown. So that idea. So we've got one of the Royal Flush Gang, the Ace of Spades, kind of going a little bit rogue and shooting this cop, this woman's telling him, like, he's going for his gun, and she's like, "Are you crazy? You're gonna get us killed." And it does in fact get him shot up pretty good. And then the cops show up, and they're like, how are you guys gonna get out of this situation? And the Royal Flush Gang, they're a little bit clever on how they pull this off.
I see, and I thought they were gonna like escape with all these hostages, prisoners with the masks on. But you know, what a great use of masks and resources, and
So the diversion being that they put the hockey masks on all of the hostages from the bank, and rather than, like you said, maybe slip out amongst those people, instead they go out through a hole in the bank vault. So it was kind of like a double plan, right? Like they would have sort of distract the cops with this one thing and then slip out the back.
They're shady guys.
And that starts us off. And then we cut over to
great.
Shirtless Oliver.
And Diggle, I'm really upset that Diggle didn't
have Diggle's not shirtless. So
it would have just, I'm like, if you're gonna go there, go there.
I think it's like, probably in Stephen Amell's contract that no one else will be shirtless when he's shirtless. He gets the shirtless spotlight.
But this is a great little duel that they're doing. And these stick things that they're playing with, I totally took a class to how to use them. I can't remember for the life of me how to do it, but I could totally, it was awesome. They're like a real thing that you can learn, and the way that you use them, it's really cool. It's super fun. If you want to like be kind of badass, go take a class.
Escrima sticks, that's what
is that called. What they are?
But awesome. Actually, I think what they were doing was some Jeet Kune Do.
Might have been, that's like, it yeah that's Jeet Kune Do. That's what I took. That's the sticks. Class I took.
It's fun. cool to see. I had sort of an epiphany when we saw that scene about Diggle.
Yeah, you did. It was awesome.
And when you see him with the Escrima, those are actually, that's the they have two. They each have two in their hands, which is why I think probably more along the lines of Kali sticks, which is Jeet Kune Do. Nightwing uses an electrically charged Escrima stick as his weapon. I was thinking, huh, this is an interesting angle, because it's not really something that Oliver uses. But maybe this is Diggle's weapon of choice.
Ooh.
And we're going to see him take on a persona at some point.
Yeah.
And here's the epiphany. Maybe not a persona that we know. Maybe a whole new hero. Which I think would be a really, really cool
idea. That'd be a really bold step for them. And really, I mean, he's stepping up and being able to prove that he's a character that we care about each week and really playing an interesting role. And I really like the role he took on this. Like, you see in this first scene, in the first exchange between the two of them, Ollie really focusing on, I told you what I was doing. I have a mission to fulfill. And Diggle really talking about, you have a narrow definition of being a hero, he says right there. And you get Ollie saying, I'm not a hero. But this dichotomy between what Diggle sees the potential in Oliver and brings that side out of him, which is just a really interesting
thing that we discover. Well, I mean, Oliver really is just a vigilante right now. I think that's why they're staying away from using the term Arrow or Green Arrow right now, because he's not a hero yet. No. He is a vigilante. He's out for vengeance, and he's out to punish these criminals, right? And his overall goal is altruistic, but we just kind of talked over the flashback to the island where he tosses a piece of paper from the book into the fire.
And you're like, no.
And then his father shows up.
Yes.
And we weren't sure which way that was going to go, whether it was going to be a ghost or some sort of weird twist. Yeah. But we'll get to that later.
So it's such a superfluous thing, but she always wears yellow. So
yes.
Laurel's friend is wearing yellow a lot. And I just thought that that's emulating Black Canary a little bit in terms of a color choice and a color palette. So I just was interested in that dichotomy, because she's not a character that we know from books. She's just Laurel's friend, right?
Yeah,
so.
No, she's just a character that they made up.
Anyways, I just thought it was interesting.
And we've got Tommy showing up at the lawyer's office to try and sweep Laurel off her feet and go on a trip to Coast City, which is where the Green Lantern's from. So
I love it. They keep totally bringing these in. And CNRI, is that what it's called? CNRI?
Yeah.
And it's a legal clinic that she works at. I know we sort of toss these terms around, but it's like legal aid, I guess, right? Is that sort of what it is?
I think so.
Okay. I've never been fully clear on what this is. But
I think they're like either a publicly funded or like a government funded sort of like for people who can't afford legal services.
And this I totally missed. So we were so distracted by her pants that I actually totally missed this scene where they're like walking down the stairs. I didn't know like what they were
just
talking about.
They were just talking about the issues with their mom.
It was a family centric episode.
And
that's the third coin, the third side to this coin that we have each week, that I never realize until we do this episode, that another legacy is him and his mom, maybe. So that's something that I never really clue into until, because it just bothered me the first time I watched it, where I was like, wow, look at them having a lot of mom time in this episode. But I have to say,
And very mommy mom time.
Mommy mom time.
Like she's very much like, I'm your mother and I care about you and that sort of thing.
And this episode, I'll say that this exchange between Speedy and Ollie about the making fun of their mom and this Carter Bowen guy was quite funny. And I felt like a nice light moment in the show.
It did, but it also felt like very kind of out of place almost in the overall tone of the show.
Yeah.
But again, it was sixth episode, right? So we're still in the area of setting tone for all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. Mm-hmm. Very different different attitudes from a lot of these characters towards each other. So I think they're starting to get back to a family dynamic now that Oliver's been back for a little while. It's no longer like everybody's walking on eggshells around Oliver. They're treating him like a normal person again. But I hear we've got Diggle trying to convince Oliver to look into this cop who we kind of skimmed over that before. This cop who got shot is now in the hospital in a coma. Oliver doesn't really want to do that. He wants to go after this another one of his crime bosses, but he's going to trick him to go into the hospital by lying and saying that this crime boss has
tried to kill himself
and now he's in the hospital. So Oliver's heading out the door, and as he does, Tommy comes walking in.
And the Speedy reference, I don't know what they keep. If we hadn't forgotten, she's Speedy, so that we're all aware of this, and it's the reason for her alcohol use later in the show.
When she starts shooting up, we'll know that they're where they're going with it.
But I like this sort of her like comment to like, don't you use your opening line, I'm a billionaire. Yeah. Like, yeah,
it's an interesting storyline that they're trying to write with these two characters.
Well, wasn't she there saying that him and Laurel had a relationship? Like, she's not dumb.
Yes.
She knows they had a relationship. I don't understand how. And this actress didn't do a super good job of making me think that she actually believed it was her that he was talking about in this episode.
It's unclear.
It was unclear until later, and then she's, like, all hurt about it. Yeah. And I'm like, but right here, I don't think you think it's you. I think you think you genuinely helped him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I that's what I got as well. Not that she was angling for her own.
Yeah. This is a great set. I want to know where they are outside the hospital, like this, or I guess it's not a set, but location. It's nice and sunny.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't really place it. It looks like it could be somewhere out at UBC.
It feels like UBC, but it doesn't. I don't recognize any of that stuff there. But anyways, and then here he's talking about the wife of the officer, and Diggle's offered to pay for the cop to be rehabilitated.
Diggle has offered for Oliver to pay.
I just think it's really funny that Ollie here is totally caught off guard by Diggle and is like, you just lied to me. I actually, whoever this actress is too, this day player, I think she did a good job. I mean, it's only one scene, but I think it was pretty good. So kudos to her. And I really like Ollie. Like, genuinely, he's, I guess, happy and connects with that character. Like, the fact that the wife is upset about her husband, but he's really sort of not in the realm of his concerns right now is this cop, right?
Yeah, so well, he's not his usual, like, public persona jerk, right?
No.
He drops his guard for a second.
And I really like this idea that Diggle's showing him, he's like, Ollie, you brought me on board, you know who I am, and I like this little smirk he gets at the end of it there, where he's like, you know what, that's good.
He says to him that, you know, like, you wanted somebody to keep you on track and to make sure you weren't, you know, going too dark, I guess, for lack of a better term. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to show you your priorities.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's okay, fine, you win. Let's go look into these bank robbers.
Yeah.
So they're doing their detective work on the computers, auto enhancing the image of this guy's high score,
because it's too hard to see on the image screen that's an L, so you know it makes more sense to read it off the side of some guy's face.
Yeah,
like, it's like, oh, he left his impression when he punched the dude.
Yeah, luckily he punched the dude in the face, so the impression of the ring is on the guy's face. Anyway, so, which means that he's gonna have to break into the police headquarters and break into evidence.
Which, you know, kind of an interesting little scene where he breaks into the police headquarters. And I like this. You made fun of me. Where he jumps onto this roof, and I think it's a very River Tam sort of reference.
Your references only go as far back as 1995. Yeah. Nothing interesting or referenceable happened before 1995.
It's what I recognize it from. He's like holding on to the, like,
as if no other character other than River Tam in Firefly has ever jumped up and held on to the sides of the wall.
No, it's fine, whatever. I thought it was good. It was a good move.
It's more of a Spider-Man move than anything. Like,
fair enough.
If you're gonna attribute that to anybody, especially if we're in the realm of superheroes, we're gonna go for Spider-Man.
But would argue River Tam is a superhero. But that's just...
But you would have to actually argue that. You don't have to argue that Spider-Man's a superhero.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, and then you have here, he's coming to throw a charity bash. And I always say he. So we're back in Laurel's office, and we've got Merlin here trying to woo Laurel by throwing a benefit for her office, which is nice. And I love her joke. What is it? Like, the first annual benefit to try to get in my pants or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Really funny. Like, kudos, Laurel. I think they're finding the humor better in this episode than they have previously for all characters. Because I know that they had a little bit of trouble with getting Ollie's character, but I think even Merlin, like, later in the episode has a zinger that you're kind of like, all right.
Was okay. It wasn't objectionable in the past. Yeah, or it wasn't like an outdated reference to MySpace or something like that. Oh no, wait, there was an outdated reference. But it was purpose.
It was purposefully outdated. Yeah. So it's good.
So they managed to computer enhance all of the the face punch pictures and find out that it was an L and that that L is for some school somewhere because they couldn't have just looked that up before. And Oliver's tracked it down to this one kid whose family disappeared, I guess, 5 years ago. They kind of like went off the grid.
I just find it funny that someone who didn't really graduate high school and is a criminal has a real respect for his high school that he wears his school
his
ring.
High school ring.
Like, it's like, I love school so much, I'm going to wear this ring all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, and then they do this cool thing where you realize that the woman in the bank was actually the mom of the
bank, was actually
which
their
is
mother.
Such a cool. It's an interesting twist. And again, that was the reveal where you were talking about them revealing that it was a family, which is kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
And you get to and here the yellow pants, the yellow mustard pants.
Yeah, we've got the mustard pants and this random weird story, like a side story about this other guy that he's kind of being compared to. That this is the perfect son who's a doctor who's gonna, you know, cure all sorts of things.
Oh,
and he talks all fancy about his medical blah blah blah. That's a pet peeve of mine, by the way, when somebody comes in and they speak
medical
just medical jargon, but any sort of jargon, so that they can be like, look at me, I have a job, like I'm employed. And it's just it's
long-term potentiation initiates the creation of a slow moving protein synthesis.
Yeah, like like that.
Oh, and this is best joke ever. He wants me to be Dr. Oz. Why would he want you to be a wizard? I laughed out loud for a good 30 seconds.
But that's good because that's like the Captain America things in Avengers, right? Where, like, he doesn't get the reference because he's been out of commission, right? So.
Oh, man. It was good times.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So now the Royal Flush are about to rob another bank.
Yeah.
And this is, of course, going to call Oliver away from his oh-so-important
brunch
where they're all drinking mimosas.
He showed up for the brunch. He just left halfway through it. I feel that's at least points.
Halfway through, he left 5 minutes into it. He, like, sat down, made a snarky comment, and left. As the mother, I'm sure she's like, what is his problem? Like, are you kidding me? So she gets up and follows him into the other room because Diggle's all like, whisper into his ear, this isn't conspicuous at all. I'm your bodyguard, but for some reason I'm relaying information to you like I'm your secretary.
He did answer his phone and come in saying someone's on. I don't know. His maybe his job description is getting blurred horribly as it progresses. So, and then we have the Royal Flush Gang, you know, exiting how, you know, it's not only Ollie that figures out where they're going to be, it's the entire police department of Starling City as they're, you know, a showdown in the middle of the basement.
And oddly, not Detective Lance for any of it.
This looks, like, oddly like a Smallville set. I feel like perhaps this is a location that's been used before.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is definitely... I guarantee that this location has been used for Luther.
Oh, and the best arrow, right? That arrow was one of our first real gadgety arrows.
Yeah,
I would argue the arrow, like you were talking about last week, it was two arrows that were shot with a chain between them.
Yeah.
Whereas this is, like, a gadget arrow.
Yeah.
So it's different than
the... He launches the arrow, and then when it impacts, it sort of spreads out these cables.
Yeah.
And is bundling these bags of money to the ground.
To the concrete floor.
Yeah, so that they can't take them.
And I love that it's not a thing. He just uses them.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there wasn't a whole montage where he's making his gadget arrows.
Yeah.
So
or
he goes to arrow.
He didn't have to explain to Diggle, check out these fancy new arrows I made, right? Like, it just, it happens, and then we're good with it. And then he evades the police by just shooting an electrical box. It doesn't really do anything. None of the lights turn out.
it just
sparks and, I guess, gives him the distraction that he needs to get away.
Yeah, it's good. Ugh. It's good. There's a thing right now called arrowing that they have all of these pictures on the Facebook page.
Yes.
So if you can dress up in your Green Arrow costume and sort of do a cool pose.
Yeah, do your best arrow pose.
I don't know, it's good. So every time Green Arrow strikes something, I'm like, oh, that's a good arrowing pose. Oh, wait, no, that's your being.
No, you are Green Arrow.
Yeah, it's good. Oh, and then there, so the family. So this is the first you have the family talking
to
each other. I love the younger son. Really just sort of stood there through this whole thing, which is, you know, fine, but.
I think you may have had one line.
Maybe. But it's good. They did a really good job. Like this older, Kyle, I think, is the older son. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think so.
But I think they were really good actor choices. I think he did a really good job.
Yeah, I like this, and I feel like some of these casting choices were made for the long term. Because when we get into later on in the episode, I don't think this is the last we're going to see of the Royal Flush Gang. I think that they'll be back. Yeah. They might be back in a mildly different incarnation.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to end up being sort of arch nemesis status. Nice. They'll be regular. Speaking of regular, Felicity Smoke is back.
You brought her. So good.
In yet another pink shirt.
I know. She really likes that color. It's good. I'm impressed with them for using her again and her computer hacking skills, because they obviously can hack into the computer database of the police department, but they can't look at this guy's high school records.
There's so. the MySpace
reference in here. Yeah.
This is another Diggle situation though, where I think that she's going to have to be brought into the fold pretty quick, because
she's smart.
She's not stupid. Like, she keeps on... Yeah. Like, he uses the ploy of, like, I'm trying to track down an old friend or something like that. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, sure, your old friend.
Yeah. So she's not... Because she's not dumb. And these faces are great that she's giving him, right? Like, she really knows. And But she knows her job, right? She knows exactly what she's doing. And
No real witty one-liners from her this time around. Yeah. No sort of, like Chloe-isms.
Yeah.
Which I liked. Like other characters, I think they're starting to figure it out.
Yeah, and she can do it with her face, right? Like, we know that she's smart and that she has sort of sarcastic-y things to say, but she doesn't need to say them all the time, right? Like, it's good. Anyways, and then we have here the again, back in the cave with the hallucination of the father. So, very interesting. I think that when he's talking about an impact that this episode has, I really feel that these scenes, or this scene with the father and the gun, and he has to go to a very dark place to do this, right? Like, whatever he's doing here as an actor, I think was really important to him, or was really, right? There's a lot going on.
I can see how this would be difficult, how this would have a lot of depth to it, and a lot of weight as a performance. I feel like it's a little bit lessened in their attempt at, like, a cliffhanger that really has no payoff, because we know he's not dead. Because he puts the gun to his head, and then it, with the closed captions on, it says gunshot, which you kind of get the gunshot and the flash back forward sound effect at the same time.
Yeah.
So that it's unclear what happened there. It's one of those things where if it played out, I feel like it would have been a little bit more powerful than breaking it up there. Yeah. But Diggle's kind of... He's trying to nail down exactly why Oliver feels the need to get quite so invested in these guys.
Yeah.
Particularly this father, who we've found out through Felicity is... He was working for Queen Industries and then was laid off. And that's sort of set into motion the chain of events that's led to them robbing banks.
Yeah.
So now Oliver feels really responsible for it, and so he's going to go give this guy an opportunity to get out before he sort of, does his whole vigilante thing to them. It's interesting, because it's a bit of a different turn for the character. This episode's sort of moving Arrow in a different direction as a hero.
And
so.
I'm ruminating on this a little bit too, this idea of the multiple roles that Stephen Amell had to play in this episode, and the idea that you have those comedic light scenes that we hadn't really had before with him and his family and the dynamics of his family, and then you have the him trying to be a better person and giving the dad a chance, and then in the cave, like, he really has to flip-flop between all of these different aspects of his character. So it's just very interesting. Just a very interesting year.
Whereas everybody else just has to play one person.
Yeah,
which is
nice.
Yeah, he's got a huge weight on his shoulders as a performer.
Oh yeah, and this
in this show.
I don't know if it's worth mentioning this plot line. So the Merlin and Laurel thing that happened right
the
now.
The B plot, which CW plot.
Really superfluous this episode. Yeah. Like, at least some episodes they sort of have, but it really, like, I guess it gave us more insight into Speedy's character and Merlin a little bit more. He became a more likable character for me in this episode, at least.
A little bit.
He grew a little bit as a person, but also a little bit mopey, like this thing with Laurel where he's
I have a problem with it because we know that they're kind of doomed.
It's
a foregone conclusion that Black Canary and Green Arrow are going to get together at some point.
Yeah.
We've already seen romantic stuff between Laurel and Oliver.
Yeah.
And I, that sort of, we know where that's going, so yeah. Anything that happens between now and then, it's like the worst season of Smallville, season 6, where Lex and Lana get together, and you know that nothing's going to really happen there. It's not going to be lasting.
Right, yeah.
By the time that they get together, they're going to have to break them apart again, because that's just not the way that it plays out, right?
Yeah, fair enough.
But we've got the Oliver confronting the king, mm-hmm. the father here of the Royal Flush Gang, in this bar, and giving him the opportunity to walk away. And he's kind of got like these veiled references, mm-hmm. like he knows what's going on, mm-hmm. And we get the impression that he realizes it.
Yeah.
Like, that they're sort of both on the same page.
Well, and that was my big question until, obviously, the end of the episode answered it for me. Yep. Is the idea that this episode setting it up and then Green Arrow showing up at the crime scene, obviously someone's going to put two and two together. And this is what I think Oliver needs to be careful with as he's going forward.
Yep.
This idea of how much can he reveal himself as Ollie and come and talk to people and reason with them in that persona. Yep. And then they don't believe him, and or they don't listen to him, and he shows up as the Arrow. That was something that bothered me in Smallville too all the time, right? Like, it's hard to not connect those two people.
Yeah.
So you really have to. It's an interesting.
Thankfully for Clark, he was dealing with people who were infected with Meteor Rock, and it drove them insane.
Yeah,
so whatever they said, it was like, it was Clark Kent. You mean Clark Kent, the mild mannered farm boy?
Yeah.
No, of course it wasn't.
Yeah,
right, you're just insane. But for
here,
with this, it's
just interesting.
Yeah, it's a little bit more. He does need to be a little bit more careful, because at the end of the episode, we kind of get.
Yeah.
Kind of get an interesting moment where he takes the hood off, right?
I mean, it's fine. I got that, like, the king and queen sitting down here for a little conversation. Interesting. His idea of legacies, and we're both the legacy of his father as this sort of crumbling city, and the legacy that he's giving to his son, and, you know, these multiple levels. And he's bugging the guy, so...
Yeah, he slips a bug into his jacket. But I think what's really interesting is we see the legacy that's been set up for Oliver. Mm-hmm. But the more interesting thing is, by the end of the episode, the legacy that we're setting up for the Ace.
Oh.
For what was it, Kyle?
Yeah,
that's
awesome.
Is that we're setting up motivation for that character to return.
Yeah,
right?
And to really hate Oliver.
Yeah,
right? Like,
yeah.
Really
so... So I think that's really where this episode's going to have payoff down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why the B and C storylines really just feel disjointed in this.
Okay,
that's the balance that I think that they're still having a hard time striking.
Yeah.
Last week's episode did it really well, managed to have those side stories at least thematically reflect on everything. But to be separate from the main story as well, and we just got a scene of Oliver and Diggle listening to the bug and finding out that they are, you know, Oliver says, "I'm giving them one chance to get out," and they don't. They're gonna go back for one more job, and Oliver goes, "Well, I guess that's that," and so now he's got to do his Arrow thing and get some justice.
Yeah. And you really, I mean, you do see him sort of struggle with that, and...
Yeah.
And this benefit gala that they threw together in, what, like, less than 24 hours?
Yeah,
seriously?
Like 48 hours.
I don't know. You know, that's... I don't know.
They're rich
little,
people.
Little
it's
points.
Fine.
It's fine. It's good.
Apparently nobody has anything good to do on a Wednesday night in Star City. Sorry, Starling City. Can we just call it Star City?
I know. Can we?
We're just
going to
call it Star City. You guys know what we're talking about.
Starling City. I don't understand. Like, are they going to deal with that later? Like, why Starling City? Can if you guys know why they're calling it Starling City?
I don't understand, because then they're like...
Coast City gets to be Coast City, not Coastling City.
Yeah, like, and they refer to...
it's all good.
Oh, I'm blanking on it. The city that... Bloodhaven, that Nightwing's from, right?
Yeah.
So,
I don't know why it couldn't be Star City.
Yeah.
That's okay, though.
So we're like this gala is just it's really it is really just pointless.
Yeah,
in this episode,
it's a way to pay for a whole bunch of extras in a room for no reason.
Yeah, well, and it's
mean,
to give all of these secondary characters
something to do. That's the thing, right? Like, just I would have loved, like, go to the island a little bit more, like
That's how I felt. Is we could have been spending time on the island dealing with Oliver's inner monologue stuff and the father and all that sort of thing, rather than another drunk speedy escapade.
Yeah. But you get, I mean, here we're like, oh wait, you actually like Merlin? Interesting. She makes this sort of weird sour face, which is kind of, you know, and then gets handed alcohol as a minor. Although I will say, I love her dress in this. Whatever she's wearing here, I really like this. So it's good. It's good.
And then this doctor guy shows up. It's funny because originally he's brought in to be a foil for Oliver so that we can see how Oliver's a terrible son. And then he gets brought in later to this gala so that we can see that apparently Tommy is a terrible person.
I know.
This doctor's just like making the rounds, sorry for the pun, to just make these guys look like tools, right?
Yeah,
like,
basically.
But really at the end of the day, the women in these guys' lives are both like, there's nothing wrong with you guys. Yeah, that guy's a loser. Nobody like, yes, he might be, you know, a doctor and all that sort of stuff, but nobody likes him.
I find a theme. They always have to have a party in each episode.
Yeah.
I guess. Maybe that's it. Maybe they just
kind of like the OC,
need
right?
to have a party.
Yeah.
Because they're rich people, and that's what they do.
Yeah.
They have galas.
But at least on the OC, they recognize that, and they would constantly refer to the fact that they were throwing yet another crazy party.
Yeah, yeah.
That was sort of one of the premises of the show. Whereas with this one, it's like, can we get back to the shooting arrows at bad guys stuff?
Yeah.
It's a little... I don't know. It's interesting because I think what we're used to is Smallville, and that had sort of the homey feel to it.
Because you go
back to the farm and you'd get the Jonathan and Martha stuff.
Yeah.
This show doesn't have that. This show has this side of it, which is the exact opposite of that.
Which is, I mean, it's working for it right now.
No, yeah, it is. It is. Yes. But it's a... It makes for a very different tone.
It's very different.
Yeah.
And I mean, we talked over that entire scene with him and his mom, which really didn't, again, it didn't need to be, I don't know. Maybe I'm just, like, suffering through this episode or, like, having a bit of trouble navigating this episode. I wouldn't say suffering, but just, like...
I think it's just that extra stuff, the stuff about his relationship with his mom one question you keep asking is, are we supposed to care about this mom?
Yeah.
Are we supposed to feel sorry for her that she's in this situation with these bad guys, with evil John Barrowman and all that sort of the cult of the squiggly line and all these things? But to me, it's really unclear because I feel like we're not supposed to relate to her. We're not supposed to feel sorry for her. But they keep giving us storylines where
we're meant to care.
Where we feel guilty on Oliver's behalf, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So we're back at the bank and we've got them breaking in at night this time. So I guess maybe that was what the dad said. You know, this bank with the one security guard.
Yeah.
That's fine. Maybe that's all there is in banks. One security guard.
No, that's normal.
Inside the
I think
bank.
That's normal.
Just hanging out.
Yeah.
All right. That's good.
I like the fact that they get into the vault so easily. I think they just put like a little bomb thing
Maybe it's their thing. Maybe they're like super great at. Oh, and he has, what is this? He has like a blast shield or like a
riot shield.
Riot shield.
Yeah, he's got a riot shield. Like, he says to Oliver, "I came prepared."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I don't know. It's.
But this is what I'm saying. We're setting him up as a I think
the
a regular
future
villain.
King.
Yeah,
of the royal flush.
Yeah, so hit the fact that he takes an
arrow to the chest.
Just
gets shot and breaks it off, and then rams Ollie through two things of glass.
Oh, like three or four.
It's intense. Yeah. Like, this is... It's good. And then the mom's sitting out in the car. It's okay. It's going to be okay. I think that's the last time we see those people in the car. Like, they don't even really tell us what happened to them.
I think maybe they drive off when the cops show.
And I don't think we actually saw what happened to this guy. He got knocked out.
Yeah,
we didn't go back and
out.
See him at the end. Like, when the cops come in, it's just the dad, right? So
you've
got Ollie, and here we go, jumps in front of the son. Because
the security guard's about gonna shoot the son, so he jumps in front, blocks the shot, and takes it to the chest, and now he's dying.
Yeah.
And Oliver screams at the security guard to go call an ambulance.
Yeah.
And this is the moment, the son's knocked out, the dad is lying on the floor bleeding out, and Oliver takes off the hood and reveals that it's him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know that he necessarily realizes that he's gonna die. I think he realizes that it's it's
possible.
That it's possible, but why would he be showing his face, right? Like, he's got to... Yeah. I agree with you. He needs to be a little bit more careful.
I don't know. Yeah, just stuff. In terms of... I mean, and it could be tied to, because you get the immediate flash here to the island. Yeah. Like, it could be tied to the idea that Ollie's really sort of reliving this thing with his own dad on the island. But it's the idea of sacrificing for your son and that a sacrifice is not going to be in vain and all this stuff, right? So, I don't know. Maybe he's just really...
Yeah. So these scenes, we haven't really talked about it that much. Mm-hmm. These scenes with Oliver and his father are really interesting, because he's sort of wrestling with this inner turmoil of the guilt that he feels for just being sort of burdened with this with this legacy, with this evil legacy of his father, of his father having done all these wrong things. And he said, you have to right the wrongs that I've done. And Oliver, we have to remember, this is Abercrombie Oliver, and he's not up to the task yet, right?
No.
He's not even up to the task of surviving on the island. He pulls the trigger and wants out. He doesn't want to have to deal with this pain anymore.
And I'm sorry I didn't tell you the truth about me. Like, I think this is really interesting, this idea of, like, all this happening in Ollie's head, but being sort of a subconscious reflection of the dad himself. And it's just very, very interesting. I love the cops came really fast for this guy.
They did. They did show up quick. But I would imagine that if Diggle and Oliver could figure out that these guys would hit, like, two or three banks in each town, that the cops were on high alert, right?
Fair enough.
Yeah, we didn't have Detective Lance to scoff and tell us that.
Week. Is it just because they were sick of paying his paycheck? I don't understand why he wasn't just maybe an extra character to throw in there. They didn't want to have
characters. I think they didn't have anything for his character to do necessarily.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that they probably wanted to. I don't know, because he's a regular cast member, so he gets paid whether he's in the episode.
Yeah, I was gonna
say,
like, at least like arresting the guys or something. Or maybe he's a detective, so maybe it's not his thing. But
yeah, it's not really.
I don't know. Yeah. It's all good. It's just very, very interesting. If there's cops around, they're not. They don't always have to be Detective Lance. So fair enough. And then back to the party where Ollie conspicuously disappeared, but. It's all good. I was able to diagnose myself as a giant tool. No, Merlin, the one.
Yeah, his one-liner that actually worked. And Thea is wasted.
Yeah, she's super fun.
Yeah, she's toast. And hitting on Tommy, and Tommy's like, "Whoa, you're like my little sister. Back off."
That was actually like a genuine. I like that reaction where he's like, "What is happening? Stop it." So. Yeah.
But I feel like it was telegraphed from a little bit earlier in the episode, and so it's kind of, I don't know. Like, they had two ways to play it, right? Tommy could either be a total sleazeball and just do it because he's upset about Laurel dancing with this other guy.
Yeah.
With Dr. Tool. And I kind of get back at her by making out with Oliver's younger sister. But he doesn't, thankfully. They don't go for the low-hanging fruit. And he kind of does the right thing here.
Although I will say, in this episode, they're setting Speedy up as Speedy.
Yes.
So I'll say, of all of everything else that's happening in Merlin and Laurel aside, this is the first episode that we really get in the beginning of the episode, the reference to Speedy blatantly as, like, stop calling me Speedy. And then you get the drunken display and the knocking over alcohol and vomiting in the right? Like, you get this progression of this character, right? So.
Well, and I think we're in the process of setting stuff up for Tommy.
Yeah.
Having him turn or complications,
or
right?
Complications,
like,
yeah.
Just complications at this point.
And it's making him more of a sympathetic character somehow as well. Like, the idea that, like, Laurel, in the end here, you get this sort of pathetic puppy dog where he's like, oh, I'm here. And he's like, nope, I'm going to take you home, even though Laurel just said that she actually sort of likes me still. So it's good. I don't know. Like, so you really are playing with this idea, right? Of all the characters that we figured out, Tommy Merlin is still that big question mark in terms of where they're wanting him to point, right? It's really...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's difficult, so... But it's good. I mean...
Yeah. But I feel like we're just setting him up with to sort of give him everything that he wants just to take it away again. Right?
Yeah.
And have him set up as a yet another arch nemesis. I think it's very much the Lex Luthor Clark Kent
sort of
thing that they did in Smallville.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a bit of a slower burn with Tommy because he's not one of the central.
Because they're going to last for so long on the air.
Yeah, and now we've kind of got the debrief with Diggle and Oliver, and he's the father of the king, the Royal Flush Gang, has died, and Diggle's trying to let him know it wasn't Oliver's fault. He gave him a second chance, which Diggle says is more than he deserved, but Oliver feels responsible because he's been burdened with this mission from his father, right?
Yeah.
And Diggle's trying to say, like, look, this is the mission.
Yeah. Like, it's the little, it's the
yeah,
people,
like,
right?
Like
the...
you tried to rescue, you tried to rescue that family, and it may not have happened, but that was a choice that they made. You did everything right. Mm-hmm. You did everything that you could in that situation, right?
And it's good here, right? Like, Ollie's really taking everything to heart, and Diggle gives him that little piece of hope, right? Where it's like the one thing, his one job in this episode, he wasn't fighting a big crime boss.
Yeah.
He was fighting little, like, petty criminals, and he couldn't even, like, save that, right? Like, he couldn't even do that.
But
and
really... the cop survived.
Yeah, and then, so that's what I mean. Diggle gives him this little hope where he's like, well, no, there's more than one way to save a city, and it's not like there's little things. Like, it's the little thing you didn't even care about that actually saves you in this episode, right? It's the, like, the thing that wasn't even on your radar.
Yeah.
And then we have the reveal of the book.
So this is the catch that we got a couple episodes from one of you guys that the book was empty, that it was all blank. And now we're finding out that, in fact, there is ink on those pages, and it's heat-activated.
Invisible.
Yeah, so...
cool.
So now Oliver has his list.
Yeah.
He's got and he says, my responsibility. I think this is a really important turning point for the character. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe this is why Stephen Amell sort of pointed this out, is that in the greater scheme of things, this episode is very pivotal for Oliver's character from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Because this is the moment where he now has something to live for.
Yeah.
So and now he has a mission, and that's everything that season 5 Oliver that we have back in Star City. He has a reason. He has a purpose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's so single-minded.
Yeah.
And why he's sort of beating himself up about stuff, because that's everything to him.
Yeah,
but Diggle reminds him in this episode that doesn't have to be everything. You can do other stuff to save the city, and affecting the people's lives around you is one way to do that. Yeah. And so he sort of has a bit of a change of heart with his mother. Not necessarily that he was trying to hurt her before.
No, but
now he's going out of his way to not
hurt her.
Right? Which is important.
You know what? Listen to you talk, I've come up with a couple realizations, right? Like, that idea, exactly what you just said about the mom, that, like, it's little things he can do. It's not all about the big things.
Yeah.
And I would say that he played two different characters in the show and switched halfway through both of them.
Yeah.
Abercrombie Boy was instant gratification. Little things matter. He was just hungry. He wanted his life to end.
Yeah.
Then he discovered the book. Larger purpose, big picture is all that matters. And then we have season five Ollie, or Ollie now present day, right? Who is all about the big picture, doesn't care who he's hurting, getting in his way. And you have that switch when he couldn't save the petty criminal guys, or right? But it's the little things that matter. Like, one guy survived and he has dinner with his mom, right?
Yeah.
So I think that that's a really interesting cross section in these two characters going in completely opposite directions, and this through line having to work that way. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, and we get the awesome moment of her going to cut the burger with the knife and fork.
Yeah.
Because she's so rich that she's forgotten how to eat a hamburger.
No.
Which I just want to put this out there. It'll be recorded on the internet. If I ever become so rich that I can't remember how to eat a hamburger, everybody out there has permission to shoot me with an arrow.
Yeah, I know.
Because it would be poetic justice at that point. Yeah, because that was that was maybe a little bit too far. Like, I get it. If she would have, like, looked at it and kind of been, like, tried to, like, wrap a napkin around it, and then he says, like, it's okay to get your hands dirty.
Yeah.
Which I think is ironic. I thought that was a really great choice of words for Oliver to be saying to her, because he doesn't know about any of this other stuff that's going on, right?
Yeah.
And he says to her, it's okay for you to get your hands dirty.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, not understanding that, you know,
she has dirty hands.
Very dirty hands.
That's good.
But she could have just freeze framed it on the preview for next week, and I think Amanda's pointing out that the Bank of Montreal
in the background.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Good old Vancouver.
Oh, and someone pointed out, like, things to, like, get at Black Canary being Black Canary and, like, hints and stuff. I remember I pointed out that there was one episode where, I think it was, like, the first episode where she's in the alleyway with Merlin and they're talking to each other, and in the background it says Nest, but I actually pointed out that's actually Nestor's Market, but he thought it was like a thing that was like canary as in like a nest and a bird thing, and I was like, oh, well, maybe it was a choice and it wasn't, but it just made me think of it differently because here I am just sort of throwing all of these things off. But it was an interesting way to look at right, there's a lot of things you can read into stories, which I thought was like a really interesting thing that here I am sitting all jaded and being like, well, they're just trying to use the city as best they can, and other people are actually reading things into these. So it's interesting. Anyways, sort of tangential.
Just back on, sort of wrap it up. I think what's really interesting is we don't really see a definitive what happened with was it Kyle? Kyle was.
I think that was the older guy.
The Ace of Spades, the older son.
Yeah.
He gets knocked out there. Presumably, he gets taken away by the cops. But the mother and the younger brother presumably get away. They weren't arrested as far as we know. The father is dead, so the king's dead.
Mm-hmm.
This leaves it open for some of these characters to return. And now to have a bit of an axe to grind with the vigilante, with Green Arrow.
And with Oliver.
And with Oliver.
Point out, right? Like, the idea that it was the Queen Industries is the reason that they got into dire straits to begin with. So it really sets him up to be a really pivotal enemy if he...
Yeah, so I don't know that we'll see them back this season. Mm-hmm. I think we could see them back this season. At least maybe one of them. Like, I think you could see the Ace of Spades come back this season in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And I be a bit more super villainy as things escalate. Because I think one of the things right now is that we've seen Deathstroke, we've seen Deadshot, we've seen China White?
Yes.
And we know that we've got Huntress coming.
Do we? I didn't know we had.
Yeah, we've got Huntress coming before the break, so...
Oh, nice.
So we know that there are these other superhero-type characters, but we don't really have anything, maybe with the exception of Deathstroke, and Deadshot is not dead, in my opinion. I'm fairly certain that he'll come back as sort of the enhanced Deadshot. But everybody's kind of at a certain level right now, and that's the level that Oliver can handle at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe with the exception of Deathstroke, like I was saying, who we're supposed to believe, I think, is dead.
No, but he never once got...
But we saw the mask in the first episode, right?
Yes, so in some...
fashion, Deathstroke's supposed to have been defeated.
In present day, he's defeated, but... Ollie from 5 years ago has yet to do that.
Yes.
So that's an interesting...
And I'm sure it'll be a long journey to get there, and whether or not that's a definitive end for Deathstroke, I don't think it will be. I think the episode where we see him defeat Deathstroke will also be the episode that Deathstroke shows up in Star City.
Interesting.
So But it's interesting to have some of these, like, sort of mundane supervillains showing up. And to set them up, and I hope that when we see some of them return, that when they return, they'll have come back and sort of amped up their arsenal and force Oliver in turn to amp up his arsenal, right? So we'll see more of the gadget arrows and more of the skills and that sort of thing. Just sort of stuff to see, maybe second half of the season, maybe projecting for season two. Because one thing I'd like to see is I'd like to see an upgrade to the costume. I don't have a problem with the costume, but I feel like it's very, like he's got the one that Yao Fei wears on the island, and we see him wearing it in at the beginning of the series and in the first episode when he's rescued from the island, and then we've got his costume from when he's back in Star City, which is similar but different, and I think we're supposed to believe that maybe some of the elements are the same, and he's just sort of added to it. But what I would like to see is maybe something a little bit more streamlined, because I feel like it's a little bit rough around the edges, right? Like what he's currently got a little bit, it's sort of raggedy in places and sort of sort of slapped together, like piecemeal a little bit, even though it's kind of got an overall to it. I don't know, and maybe that's just me wanting to see something a little bit more like the Green Arrow from Smallville. Which, like, this is the thing, is that the Green Arrow in the New 52 reboot is very reminiscent of the Green Arrow from Smallville, and not this Green Arrow. Which I think is really weird, because, I mean, the show was going into production around the same time, or at least they were planning to put it into production around the same time that the New 52 happened. And you would think that they would have tried to sync things up. But the New 52 has its own issues. Those characters all look very 90s. And that the Justin Hartley Green Arrow had a very, like, 90s-esque. It was 90s-esque, but it was also very kind of like different and modern. It was kind of, actually, it was very X-Men, like 99 X-Men movie-esque in its design. But see, like, I'd like to see something move a little bit more towards that. Not the yellow accents in it, but, and, like, keep it with green and black. But something just a little bit more, a little bit more sleek, a little bit more advanced looking, right?
I can get on board with that.
But he's not quite there yet, right? Yeah. We're sort of slowly seeing him come online with the different arrows and that sort of thing.
I love that you went on your little, like, designer rant there for a minute as like creative, like really design. But it's true, right? He hasn't come into his own in terms of a persona yet.
Yeah.
He is just, this is just a thing for him. He's not assembled anybody yet.
Yeah.
He's not standing for anything yet. He's just on a mission, and the suit helps him achieve that, right?
Yeah.
So until we get that fleshed out in his character, there's no need for the suit to come with that. So it's really one of those things that'll go side by side with sort of the formation of his character. Yeah, I think
to go back to Smallville, something very similar to Clark's sort of evolution into Superman, where at first he's just running around in his civilian clothes doing his thing, and they call him the Red Blue Blur.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, a bunch of stuff happens, and spoiler alert, you know, that people die.
You should have watched it already.
Yeah, so he kind of goes a little bit dark for a little bit, so he wears the all black, but that's the first time he kind of puts on the S as a symbol, right?
Yeah.
And they just start calling him the Blur.
Yeah.
And then he comes back from that sort of more towards the Superman that we know and love, and he puts on
the awesome coat.
Yeah, the wicked leather jacket with the emblem on it. Mm-hmm. And what do they call him? They just keep calling him the Blur at that point, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Because, I mean, they don't call him Superman until
they
the
don't.
End, right?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure they call him the Blur. That's
and then he moves from that almost uniform.
Yeah.
Into the Superman suit, right? So I think if we look at that sort of as a model, and sort of that logic, and even, you know, let's do a different analogy. Look at Batman Begins. When he starts off in Batman Begins, he starts off with the ninja gear, right? And then he comes back to Gotham, and he puts together the stuff from Lucius Fox with the equipment from Wayne Enterprises, and he puts together like the Kevlar bodysuit, and but no cowl at that point, no cape at that point, none of that stuff. He's just got the bulletproof bodysuit. He's got the belt, which is part of his the grapple gun harness that he uses, and that's it. So the first time he goes out is Batman. He's not really Batman yet. He's just a ninja.
Yeah.
And but then after that first time out, he sort of comes up with the ideas of like, let's add the cowl.
Yeah.
Let's add the bat symbol to it. Yeah. Let's add the cape.
It's become a character, right?
To become the symbol. And I think that you hit it like right on the nose with that. That he's, because we're, like we've been saying, he's just the vigilante now. Nobody's calling him Arrow. Nobody's calling him Green Arrow. That's for sure. And right now he's just a vigilante. He's just this hooded figure that people keep seeing showing up at these crime scenes and stuff. So an evolution for the character, an evolution for that, for all of the different aspects, right? I mean, in his personal life, we're seeing him make a lot of changes. In the hero side, he's making a lot of changes. And I would like to see, as those happen, to see the visual aesthetic of the character change along with it. So as he becomes more heroic, hopefully his costume becomes a little bit less dark, right?
Yeah.
As he can sort of step out of the shadows a little bit more, he can start to dress a little bit more like the Green Arrow that we know, and at the same time maybe have to do some of the stuff like conceal his identity a little bit better. Because right now the hood and the makeup, not really doing it, right? Yeah, like, I mean, all he has to do, if the hood gets knocked off, people can see who he is, right?
Screwed. Yeah.
So, like, it's a silly thing, but a domino mask breaks up the lines of the face.
Yeah.
And it goes a little ways to, to disguising you, right? It actually does a lot more than we give it credit for sometimes when people are trying to, like, pick apart characters and stuff like that in comic books. So, so I don't know. It was, that was a long way about of saying. Hopefully, we'll see the Royal Flush Gang back. And when we see them back, I want to see them back with sort of
a vengeance.
Well, I want to see them as maybe a little bit more
refined.
Yeah, with their own mission, right?
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
Because with this, like, they're just we kind of glossed over it in their motivation, but. The father gets laid off, they lose their house, they've got nothing, so they start going around the country robbing banks. Yeah. And they're robbing banks in order to get enough money so that they can go to Mexico and be set for the rest of their lives and not have to worry about anything. And that's sort of a mission, but you feel like it's not really...
It's not a super powerful stakes.
But now that the father's been killed and the eldest son's been put in jail, presumably, now they'll have reason to come back with a vengeance.
Yeah.
They'll have the mother and the younger son, because they're on their own, will have to sort of, I think they'll have to amp up their game in order to possibly break out the older son and then go after the Green Arrow, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I'd like to see, and that's what I think. That's what I got the most out of this episode, other than his transformation, and finding his mission, and finally getting the answer to how did all those names get in the book?
Yeah, which is great.
So yeah. now next week's episode, I didn't look up the title of.
And there's a preview here.
Yeah, they're not going to give us the title. Maybe I can actually look it up on the TV.
There's no titles on these things.
But we're horribly, woefully unprepared.
I said we should write this stuff down before we record. Really, what is it? The best, least professional podcast on the internet.
Yeah.
Proves it once again.
Yep.
It's good, though.
Least professional. Emphasis on the least professional this week.
Yeah, but we're still, I mean, Destiny Leaves Its Mark, by the way, is the tagline for Arrow, and it's pretty awesome.
See, that's bugging me a little bit. I'm not seeing Arrow for next Wednesday, but...
No, it'll be... They keep messing around with...
Yeah, Canadian viewers, keep your program your DVR, and if you don't have a DVR, make sure that you're checking every week, because... This is something that I actually wanted to talk about, so I'm glad that you brought it up. CTV has a really bad habit of not caring about their genre shows. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They did the same thing to the Clone Wars when they were airing it, because the first season of the Clone Wars was on CTV. Mm-hmm. They moved it from Sunday nights to Sunday afternoon to Saturday at some point. Like, they kept moving it around, which means that an audience can't find it. So if you're enjoying it, you're watching it on CTV, you have to go that extra mile and make sure. Now, if you watch YouTube videos at all, which I do a lot, I watch a lot of YouTube on my lunch breaks at work. I've seen a lot of previews for Arrow.
Yes.
On CTV, on YouTube and stuff like that.
They are promoting it.
So that, and every time that they've done a schedule change, they've made an effort to make sure that people know. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't, it's still not a good idea to make schedule changes like that. So if anybody from CTV is listening, please stop doing this to Arrow. Pick a night, pick a time, leave it alone so that people can tune in. Yeah. And if you're watching on CTV, be vigilant, right? Like, just make sure that you check every week. Yeah. It's going to be on when it's supposed to be on.
Yeah.
So you've got the title for the next episode.
Well, actually, I have an interesting thing here on IMDb. It says that there's only 3 more episodes in 2012, and then it goes to 2013. But the next episode, it looks like
that's right. That's what Stephen Amell said. He said 9 episodes. And then, after the first episode aired, he said 8 more weeks,
and then
the break. Yeah. So
the next 3, I'll just say the next 3.
Ahead.
So we've got Muse of Fire next week. Then we've got
M-U-S-E?
Yeah.
Okay.
Muse, like the Greek muses. And then Vendetta.
Okay.
And then Year's End. So Muse of Fire, Vendetta, Year's End. And then the one of the new year is called Burned. So it's very exciting. These titles tell us a lot about sort of the progression of this character.
Yeah.
So we really have some interesting things. So Muse of Fire next week. Dinah Laurel Lance, John Diggle, and all of these people coming back for that one. And I'm interested to know what it's about. We didn't really watch the preview.
No, we didn't watch the preview before. So, and we could watch it now, but we wouldn't have any audio. So, but I'm sure you guys can check out those previews. I'm sure you guys have already all seen the preview for next week. But we know a few things that are coming up. We know that we've got Huntress showing up at some point. Let's see. Am I seeing? You know what?
Maybe we've got Huntress in next week's episode. It's possible next week, right?
We've got this girl with black hair.
And I tried to find out who she is, but IMDb was being less than helpful.
So I don't know. It seems like it's sort of another vigilante, or maybe it's a villain of some other sort.
Yeah, but she looks pretty dark and menacing, and it's good. We've got this board that's tying together all of these people, right?
I saw a crossbow, so I'm gonna say that it's Huntress.
Okay,
I'm gonna say that it's Huntress.
Yeah, sure. And it would be really interesting to see. So it'll air on the 21st, I think. So that's next week. So we've got we don't have a hiatus yet for a while. So we've got to keep these new ones keep coming, which is nice. So very exciting. And Muse of Fire, I really like that title. Their titles, I really think that whoever's writing these episodes, we really should pay more attention to that.
So and the give titles, them their props. So titles, and the writers,
good job, kudos again. And I mean, cast and crew here in Vancouver doing an awesome job. And all around, I mean, we're 6 episodes in and still going strong. So congratulations, Arrow, and thanks everybody for watching. And
Huge following, not just for us, but like especially for Arrow.
It's good.
And
yeah.
I mean, like, my friends are talking about it, which is weird, because when I started Frontlines, I was like, oh, this new Clone Wars show is awesome, and nobody was watching it.
Oh, geez.
And there's we have tons of listeners on the podcast, and I know that people are watching Clone Wars, but none of my friends are watching Clone Wars. But with Arrow, I've got a good, you know, half a dozen, like, close friends who are all watching it, not including Amanda. So it's really cool that the show is finding this this audience so early on. I think it's deserved. I think that it's a really good effort. When we see other superhero stuff that's been on TV or genre stuff that's been on TV in recent years, I mean, I think back to Heroes, and people complained about Smallville at times, but Smallville at its worst was never as bad as Heroes at its worst.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and Smallville at its best was way better than Heroes ever was at its best.
Well,
so, like, Green Arrow is following in that legacy.
And we're talking about sweet spots, right? It found a sweet spot in a gap for genre television right now, right? We've had other things that have been on the air. I mean, Supernatural, I mean, I'm very sorry. I know it's a great show, but it's petering out, right? It's been around. Yep. It's almost expired. Smallville's gone now.
Yep.
A lot of other shows that had been around for a while, right? There's nothing Joss Whedon on television right now, right? Like, it's just like...
There will be soon. There and will it'll be superheroes.
Right? But I'm just saying, right now, Arrow is filling a very needed gap in our programming. And
absolutely.
It's great that there's a lot of support for it, and it's great that it's not screwing anything up, really, right now, which is good. Like, it's going in a good direction.
Yeah.
Kudos to Arrow. Yeah. So,
cool. Awesome. Well, let us know what you guys have to say about this episode and any other episodes and our episode of Quiver. You can do that by mailing us at mail@quiverpodcast.com.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Quiver Podcast. Or like us on Facebook, facebook.com/quiverpodcast.
Yep, and always keep up to date on the website, quiverpodcast.com. Mm-hmm.
And you can also follow us personally. I'm at A Konkin, A-K-O-N-K-I-N, for me personally. And
I'm at Arkwulf, A-R-K-W-U-L-F.
So keep the conversation going. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
See you next week.